Kieran Riley knows what it feels like to be heard on the radio.
We had a local station up in Northampton. There was a show every Friday night, Bob Green, and I would call up, and he'd always take my call.
He knew you?
No. Eventually, after a few calls, he'd be like, oh, yeah, I think I recognize that guy's voice. And I just felt, and he'd listen, you know, it's his show, but he'd listen to what I had to say. And it was like this feeling of empowerment. And like
it inspired him. And now, he's about to start hosting his own radio show. But Kieran is not a professional radio DJ. He's a farmer. And his radio show, it's going to be about the thing he knows best, farming.
I really want to interview people. And I feel like I know a lot of farmers, a lot of people in the area, a lot of people involved with agriculture on some level. Like, I know for a fact that if there's a CSA farmer who's going to be interviewed, or a couple of them interviewed on a show, there's going to be other farmers wanting to listen in, see what he has to say. Because, you know, they're all in the same boat in a lot of ways, and everyone has their own different approaches or egos or whatever. And sometimes some don't get along with others, or there's weird history or drama. But the bottom line is they want to know what the other one has to say.
Chances are, most radio stations are not going to let a guy like Kieran, someone with no training in radio whatsoever, have free rein over their microphone for a couple hours each week. The place that will let him do this, however, is WGXC, a community radio station in upstate New York. Well, it will be a community radio station. Right now, it's not even built yet. But that's why Kieran is standing in a grammar school auditorium that's bustling with people. Some are cooking. Others are armed with video cameras and voice recorders. Some are decoupaging masks or screen printing t-shirts. He's at a weekend-long event that's brought 300 people together from all over the country to celebrate the building of this radio station. The event is called a barn raising.
Like you can just see things just happening. You know, it's really inspiring. There's a real human element to it. It's not like this just corporate thing of like, oh yeah, we got the corporate money and now we're going to go on the air or whatever. And it's just people. There's people behind it, not like money and weird stuff and like corporations. Just such a different feel, you know.
In rural America, around the 18th and 19th centuries, entire Amish communities would gather together to help one family build a barn. Everyone built it by hand, and at the end of it, you not only had an essential structure erected, but a stronger community bond because of it. This is the idea that inspired the Prometheus Radio Project when it hosted its first radio barn raising back in 2002. Since then, they've built 11 radio stations in 8 years, all over the country. And it means that people like Kieran, people who have something to say and not many places to say it, can put their voice and their stories out into the world.
I'm excited. I'm just super, super excited. I'd love to do more. I might be helping out on the morning show from 6 to 8 a.m. They want some help, possibly, with some of the programming. And it might be an agricultural aspect to that early morning part, too. Because, like, if farmers are just getting up and getting in the barn, and, you know, a lot of times there's a radio on.
Been inside a radio studio before. Okay, so that's most people. That's great. Hopefully that'll be all of you by the end of the weekend.
The Prometheus Radio Project is a collective of radio enthusiasts and activists. They work on changing media policy in America pertaining to radio and help groups that want to start their own radio stations get off the ground. Most of the members at Prometheus are at the barn raising, and they're all running around, making sure that everything is going as planned.
Really exciting, over 40 plus workshops that are happening throughout the weekend. So thanks to all of our wonderful presenters that are here that are facilitating and leading workshops. How many of y'all went to workshops today? How were they? Okay, so Sunday, you might have been looking over there and being like, what are those things? They're because we're gonna have a parade that's gonna be really fun and awesome. Those are radio towers. You can be your very own radio tower in the parade. This weekend is to get all of the studios in Hudson built and have WGXC start doing its regular programming from the Hudson studio. It won't be on FM radio quite yet, but it'll be on the internet and it'll be on the radio in probably 2 months or so, maybe even a little less.
If you're wondering why building a community radio station is such a big deal, It's because the way media policy is in this country does not make it easy. In fact, it's very, very hard to create a community radio station. It takes a lot of work and a lot of money, and that's before you're even on the air. So, for the Prometheus Radio Project and the creators of WGXC, this barn raising really is cause for celebration. A community radio station is non-commercial, hyper-local, created for a community, by a community. With the exception of a small paid staff, it's completely run by unpaid volunteers who just do it for the love. These stations also have to be educational, though this doesn't necessarily mean through academia. In the case of WGXC, it has sprung out of a nonprofit artist collective. At the helm are wife and husband Galen and Tom.
I'm Galen Joseph Hunter. I'm the executive director of Free 103.9, which is the parent organization of WGXC.
And I'm Tom Rowe, the program director of Free 103.9 and of WGXC.
You know, Tom and I have worked together for a long time. We're also married. And one thing I'm really proud about is that we tend to go full force into projects and don't look back.
My name is Kaya Weidman, and my official role at WGXC is the volunteer coordinator and the Hudson studio manager. You know, those are my official roles, but as a core staff, since the pretty close to the beginning, we all wear a lot of different hats. So I have a lot of experience in working on community projects, but I was definitely a newbie when it came to working on radio.
Radio can be cheap to make, cheap to hear, accessible by anyone with a radio. You don't have to be literate, because it only requires listening. You don't even have to be paying attention 100% of the time. For Galen, Tom, and Kaya, three people living in the town of Hudson, New York, the creation of an independent radio station in their community means connecting the diverse and sprawling population across two adjacent counties by giving people a chance to speak to their neighbors over the airwaves.
Even before we're on the air, the radio station has been an opportunity and a venue for so many different groups to get involved and see that there's a lot of power and potential in having a voice that is like uncensored and also like not controlled by sort of commercial interests, which almost all media is. And I think that radio is unique as an accessible form of technology in that both on the listener end and also on the producer end, I really believe in it as a multi-directional participatory medium. And, you know, internet is a wonderful tool as well, but you really have to seek things out. So you've got to be looking for something. You know, you have to already have had the interest to sort of stumble across stuff. Whereas radio is interesting because it's, you can accidentally learn a lot. You hear things that you didn't expect.
Yeah, my name is Brandy Doyle, and I'm a member of the Prometheus Radio Project Staff Collective, and I'm the policy director here at Prometheus. I advocate for rules at the FCC and at other levels of government that will support community radio to thrive. I think community radio gives people a sense of empowerment and a sense that it's regular people who are making news and shaping the way we think about ourselves. I think that media in general helps, you know, reflects back to us who we are. And so that reflection is really important. And the reflection that you get from a community radio station, a good community radio station, makes more things possible.
So how do these regular people get access to the airwaves anyway, legally or otherwise? The nitty-gritty of media policy is a complicated tangle of legislation and lobbying, not to mention the finer points of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. They're the gatekeepers to actually starting your own radio station. But Brandy thankfully walked me through the history of radio ebbs and flows.
I can start in 1928. Where should I start?
We're in Philadelphia, in the basement of a church. These are the headquarters of the Prometheus Radio Project.
The way that the regulation of radio was designed in this country was to support large commercial networks from the very beginning. Radio regulation really coalesced around the 1934 Telecom Act, and big networks had a role in setting the policy even back then. Even back at that time, these large networks were setting the rules such that it pushed non-commercial users off of the dial. And this was before FM. It was off of the AM dial at that time. And really, they prioritized large commercial networks. And I think it's important for people to realize that it wasn't inevitable. It was never inevitable. There was a fight even in the 30s about what would happen with radio, and the commercial networks won. And the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, who is still alive and well today, won at that time. And they pushed non-commercial stations off the band. The other thing that's worth noting about the kind of historical perspective is that at that time, there was lots of room when people applied for licenses, and so the licenses were given away for free because you don't technically own the airwaves. You own the license to use the airwaves. And at that time, those licenses were really available pretty much only to white men. That was a time when people of color didn't own radio stations, largely women didn't own radio stations. And so at the time, it was kind of an affirmative action program for white men where everything was free for this particular group of people who then have passed down, these companies continue, the same companies own these radio networks. And so if you fast forward to today, there's no space left on the dial.
So just to repeat, you need a license in order to broadcast over the radio legally. Without a license, what you're broadcasting is essentially pirate radio. And like pirated music, it's illegal in this country.
Most of the band has always been set aside for commercial radio. When they started the FM band, they were able to get a sliver of the FM band for non-commercial radio. And, that's the front of your dial, the far left of your dial where you hear NPR and some other non-commercial stations. And that was given away at that time because it wasn't thought that the FM band would be very valuable. And of course, things changed and the FM band became more valuable.
The 90s saw the passing of the 1996 Telecommunications Act under President Clinton, an act that effectively deregulated media ownership, meaning that certain companies and corporations no longer had a limit on how many different radio and TV stations they could own. This is why we have about six huge corporations that own most of our media today, Viacom, News Corp, and Disney, to name a few. Even so, in the 90s, there was still lots of small broadcasting all over America. It wasn't always legally licensed, but they weren't necessarily radio pirates either. And some groups were allowed to use these frequencies to talk to their neighborhoods, very small audiences. So instead of calling it broadcasting, casting to a broad range of people, it was called microcasting. And that's how Tom Rowe got his start.
This is Free 103.9. Thanks for tuning in Tuesday night.
I moved to New York in 1995 and started Free 103.9 in 1997 with two artists who worked with sound. There were a lot of different micro stations in the 90s, and we were the station that was more focused on making the content on the radio more creative and interesting and kind of pushing the boundaries of the actual programming and content. And so Free 103.9 sort of naturally grew into an arts organization focused on radio art.
Galen and Tom met in 2000. Free 103.9, named after the radio station, was a growing collective of artists and activists. They eventually received status as a nonprofit organization that focused on what Tom and Galen call transmission arts, and it explored what it means to use the airwaves in a creative way.
It was really exciting to watch what seemed like an emerging media art practice, and what we really use transmission to mean the radio part of the transmission spectrum, which of course includes a lot of things beyond just common radio frequency. A lot of projects that we classify as transmission arts are conceptual in nature and dealing with what it means to use the airwave space as a palette, equivalent to the way an artist uses paint.
Tom and Galen worked on changing the perception of what radio could be used for, but at the same time, the FCC had no specific regulation for microbroadcasting. What Tom calls civil disobedience led to a movement of people who pushed their way onto the air, whether they were allowed to or not. There was a pirate radio station called Kind Radio in San Marcos, a small town in southern Texas. The commercial radio that reached San Marcos came out of the nearest big cities, San Antonio and Austin, because that's where the main advertising markets were. In 1998, the whole town flooded. Kind Radio wasn't a licensed station, but it was the only source of local news to the town of 39,000 people. And unlike commercial stations, whose content is often recorded the day before, Kind was always live. For hours, people were calling the station, letting their family members know they were okay.
The mayor ended up getting on the pirate radio station to tell people, give people vital public information while the commercial station kept playing Tom Petty songs and pretending there wasn't a flood going on.
It was clear at that point that there needed to be some changes in what kind of radio was legal, especially when it was the kind that was literally saving lives.
Where the micro radio movement kind of sprung from, and we're working in the arts, but we're also grounded in this belief that the community should have access to its own airwaves.
In 2000, the FCC introduced a new class of radio station, and they called it low-power FM radio, or LPFM for short. Basically, an LPFM is a radio station that's 100 watts. That's a signal that'll only reach a couple miles. And they're ideal for very localized groups of people that are looking for a means of communication that's tailored just for them. 100 watts isn't that much when you consider that most commercial stations operate at a minimum of 6,000 watts and often go into the tens of thousands. Schools, churches, farm workers' unions, Neighborhood Watch, environmental and civil rights organizations, these are just a few of the types of groups that have started LPFM stations. In 2000, the application window opened, and thousands of groups applied for licenses with hopes that they could finally broadcast legally for the first time.
Well, as soon as the FCC opened this service, which was pushed for by hundreds and thousands of letters that they got from community groups all around the country, from people on the far, far right, from the Christian Coalition, from a lot of religious groups that wanted access to the media, to people on the far, far left, and everywhere in between, all different kinds of groups that wanted to have access to the airwaves for different reasons. The one group that didn't want them to have access to the airwaves was the National Association of Broadcasters, who their members had a monopoly on the band. And so the main reason for opposing Low Power FM has always been the competition that it would provide. And not even really competition, because these stations are all non-commercial, so they don't have advertising. So it's more about the challenge, I think, to the media system that it represents. I think it's actually the possibility of increasing the quality of programming on the air to increase people's expectations of what they might get out of their media.
Another big argument is that of interference. Full power stations were worried that having low power stations around would interfere with their signal, since the smaller stations are kind of shoved along the radio dial next to the big boys.
This is a little bit crazy. This is like saying that a light bulb that's 100 watts could interfere with a lighthouse. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Brandy, it turns out, is right. Congress mandated a study of the supposed harmful interference, and they found that, in fact, it's not true at all. In the original proposal, LPFMs were allowed at what is called the third adjacent channel. This means that if Kiss FM is at 93.1, then you couldn't have your LPFM at 93.3 or 93.5. But you could have it on 93.7, which is three clicks away on the radio dial. But the NAB, still one of the biggest opponents of LPFM, passed the Broadcast Preservation Act in 2000, which restricted the frequency of low-power stations to the fourth adjacent channel, which means that the station you previously had on 93.7 was now pushed to 93.9. But why is this a big deal?
This third adjacent restriction essentially gutted LPFM, and it's never come back from it to this day. What happened was, because the distance now that you have to be from another radio station is so far, it's removed all opportunities for low-power stations in urban areas. And so the FCC has kind of given up on giving out licenses because it's almost not worth the trouble. So they had a round of giving out licenses back then, and they gave out some, and there are some amazing examples of low-power stations all over the country that do amazing things. But they stopped, and they haven't gone back to it. And they're just waiting for Congress to reverse its decision, because until they do, the FCC's hands are tied.
It's a stalemate. No more LPFM licenses. And even if there were licenses to give out, they would all be for rural areas. No stations even remotely close to any cities. With these restrictions in place, a lot of people who were still looking to start a radio station for their community headed to where they could find the open space and open air. Hudson, New York is about 2 hours north of New York City, not far from the Catskills. If you walk along the streets of this urban pocket of an otherwise rural area, you'll see the once magnificent homes of ship captains that now sit abandoned and boarded up on quiet streets. Hudson was originally settled by whalers and merchants in the 17th century. Then it was known as the main hub of speakeasies and brothels during Prohibition. Finally, there's been a revival in art and antiques since the 90s. The town wears this history on its sleeve. Warren Street boasts bistros, high-end antique shops, and galleries. The next block over is called Prison Alley. It's lined with dilapidated row houses and a few trailer homes. WGXC is almost perfectly situated at the intersection of these two streets, and in a way, it's almost perfectly symbolic of Galen and Tom's mission to unite the disparate populations of Hudson and of Greene and Columbia counties through what they feel is the most accessible and democratic medium there is, radio. Galen and Tom stayed in Brooklyn until 2004, when they moved to Cairo, New York, to what they christened Wave Farm, a 29-acre piece of land that became home for transmission artists. Greene County, where Cairo is located, has a history of alternative media, from a pirate TV station in the 70s hosted by the Video Freaks, or a collective of sound artists called ZBS. So, in a sense, a community radio station would carry on that torch.
Well, the folks at Prometheus Radio Project had heard wind that there was going to be an FM application for full power licenses, and they determined that there was going to be a frequency available in this area, and they contacted us and said, you guys should apply, there's going to be a frequency available. And we heard that and had a short conversation and pretty much immediately decided that we should apply, given that it was a rare, extremely rare opportunity. So we did. We got a small grant from Public Radio Capital, and we got some local donations enough to pay for the attorney's fees and the engineering fees to get the application in. And
I actually had some hesitations about applying. Tom was gung-ho, but I was worried about coming up with the funds to apply. As Tom mentioned, we put a call out to the community, and that support from the right off the bat, I think, was really demonstrated how this project was going to be important.
So it's important to point out that even though Tom and Galen started Free 103.9 as a micro radio station, they applied to the FCC in 2007 for what's called a full power community station. This is a station that, in principle, has similar goals to that of LPFM, but only nonprofit organizations could apply. And instead of 100 watts, well, if Tom and Galen got this station, they would have over 3,000 watts to work with, and would be capable of broadcasting to 78,000 people across both the Greene and Columbia counties.
There is a community here, but it's not in touch with each other all that well. There's a handful of newspapers and some online content, but we're hoping to be the kind of glue that binds that already existing content and helps further create this community that is kind of lacking in having a voice on the airwaves or in print.
Anyone can apply for a radio license. You don't have to be any sort of professional. But in 2007, in order to actually win a license, there were two things that you did need: an attorney and an engineer who have applied for licenses before, and hopefully successfully. But attorneys and engineers do not come cheap. So a third thing you need is fundraising.
Our task was to find people that we could work with and that we could afford. And so much of our work was done in having to raise the money to pay them and sort of organize the information that they needed to fill out their application accurately.
Michael Cousins is a lawyer who filed 85 different license applications when the FCC window opened up in 2007. One of those was for Galen and Tom. In general, applications for radio licenses are frozen.
And then a window is an exception. They say, okay, we're going to lift the freeze for a period of time and entertain applications. So, okay, they lifted the freeze for 2 weeks and they got 4,000 applications.
Is there any rhyme or reason to, you know, why they're opening the application window at a certain time? Is it kind of just whenever they feel like it?
Oh, they just get tired of all the mewling and whining that goes on and people coming around saying, well, when are you going to open another window? And so finally they do it. So it's somewhat political pressure to get it done.
So you get in your application, then you get approved, then you get your construction permit, and you have a certain amount of time to raise the money to get the station built.
It took about 10 months to get the application in, and then it was actually almost exactly a year from putting the application in until officially finding out.
And with a great leap of faith, we actually went into pretty high gear in establishing a radio council. So no, there was never a moment where we forgot about it, but which was a good thing, I think.
Yeah. What would your advice be to another group that wants to start this process to have their own radio station?
Get started building a community to work with you. I mean, we started 3 years ago, basically it was the two of us, and then there were 3 people and 4 people and 5 people and 15 and 20 people. And now there are 200 or 300 people that are actively doing something specific to help get the station on the air. And that's the only way it could have happened, unless you can come in and bankroll something. And nobody here can do that. We're all doing it with our hard work.
I met Michael, the lawyer, at the barn raising. He flew in from Oakland to be there.
So, you know, would you mind just saying, like, where we've been walking this whole time?
Well, we've been walking down through downtown Hudson from 3rd Street to 7th Street. A lot of historic buildings on our way to the WGXC studio, which I've never seen before. I guess it's actively under construction right now, isn't it?
It is.
So there are engineers and carpenters in there, and we have to tread carefully not to interfere with their work.
I think they want us to help out. I'm going to go build cables.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. I've never built a cable before. but I'm going to learn how and help them out.
Okay, great.
Are you going to try to build anything or just kind of check out?
Why not? Yeah. Oh, well, let's check it out.
Tom has been to past barn raisings, and of course they're infamous, so we had always dreamed and hoped that we would have one.
The past 11 barn raisings have been for low-power FM stations, which ideally could be built in a weekend. But this time it's different. This is the first time they are building not a low-power, but a full-power community station. This means a bigger antenna, a bigger transmitter, and just more all-around stuff to put together. It's a much bigger challenge, and while everyone here seems excited, there's apprehension in the air. There's so much to organize, hundreds of people to house, feed, teach, and put to work over the course of the next 3 days. Tensions could get high.
The idea of a barn raising is that instead of just having people do stuff they know how to do, we want to have people do stuff that they don't already know how to do. So in a great barn raising, everything gets built by people who've never built something like it before. So if there's something that you don't know how to do in a radio studio, probably applies to most of you, you should come by and try to learn how to do it.
We're upstairs in the studio at 11 o'clock at night, and a group of 15 people are drinking beer and learning how to use soldering irons to make cables. Every piece of equipment that's made here tonight will be used in the main broadcasting studio. The type of cable that Ben Sheldon is making connects a microphone to the console board that will then transmit the sound on air.
I may be emoting over this cable soon.
So Ben, is that a finished product?
A finished product, but not a tested product.
Okay.
All right.
So here's the lie detector. So, where were you on the night of August 7th, huh? Huh? Where were you? All right, that's a good connection.
All right.
Now, we're going to do like a counter check and stuff to make sure that there isn't...
When testing the cable, Ben finds out that he forgot to attach one essential wire to another.
Good. Dude, this would have been perfect. This would have been... So, Ben, welcome to my world. So, actually, it's not the end of the world because all you need to do is...
Connect
the blue one.
Because this is, you know, a birthing moment, and that we're going to create an institution that continues to build community in this area. And at this moment, we're going to be connecting this community with national and international movements.
There's been a lot of talk about building community, but how does that actually happen? It seems like a nice idea in theory, but how can a radio station actually change the people that it broadcasts to? Well, to try to answer that, I talked to Danielle Chenoweth, who works with Prometheus.
I'm a community organizer, so I, you know, I knock on doors, I talk to people. Like, that's who I am.
Danielle moved to Urbana, a small town in the cornfields of Illinois, after college, because she heard there was a lively community radio station and wanted to be a part of it. Once there, she helped start WRFU, a low-power FM station that actually was the focus of Prometheus Radio Project's ninth barn raising.
You know, so many of us have become cynical, and so many people have become cynical that they can make some kind of change happen on a national level. Well, the national is built of the building blocks of local communities, and it's through local neighborhood and town organizing that we begin to see our own power of self-governance.
Sure, but where does radio come in?
I don't really care about radio, to tell you the truth. I couldn't give a rat's ass about it, you know? What I care about is people coming together to organize, to make their lives better, and to make the lives of everyone in the community and in the world eventually better. So radio to me is a tool for that, and it's a really effective tool, and the particular technology that it is an effective community organizing tool like no other.
To illustrate this, Danielle shared the following story. Right when she moved to town, she heard wind that there was a toxic waste site in the area, and the power company responsible for it had never cleaned it up. On top of that, lots of people in the neighborhood had been developing rare forms of cancer, and most of them blamed the site.
I would go over and see this kind of like vacant lot with this big fence around it, but there were holes in the fence and there were kids playing on the grass in this toxic site. And I was very concerned about this, and there were many organizing things I was doing at the time, and I kind of tried to see if anybody was interested in doing something, and I couldn't get a lot of traction, and I had heard there had been some efforts and none of them had ever worked. But when we went on the air with RFU, RFU was really a brand new community voice. So there were students on campus and there were people in the neighborhood, and they started to meet and use the radio station for meetings to organize. And they wanted to have a toxic tour.
They went around and interviewed residents in the neighborhood, producing audio, video, and print pieces about the toxic waste site.
And so WRFU was the center point for this organizing, and there were these stories of residents talking in their own words about three generations of people with cancer, the same kind of very strange cancer, and cancer dotted all over this site. I mean, it's very obvious that there's a problem here. So after these stories were produced, the city council woke up and started having hearings about it. The Illinois EPA got involved. The neighborhood really started organizing. And if you go there now, there's a big tent over the property where they're excavating the dirt off of the property, and they're helping to clean up the site. And that's something I just had felt like, I don't know if I'm ever going to see this in my lifetime. I don't see people mobilizing around this. And RFU is a very important organizing tool for the community to come together and change and clean up this toxic waste site.
Community organization can take many forms. And it doesn't only happen in matters of life or death. In most areas, people just hope that their media will address the things they care about, the things that affect them in their everyday lives. Remember Kieran from the beginning of the story? He wanted to connect his fellow farmers, who might not know each other, spanning all over Greene and Columbia counties. It's almost like a power in numbers mentality. The more these farmers can share the things they have in common through communicating with one another, hopefully the happier and more productive they'll become. I talked to a lot of local people about the kinds of issues they hope WGXC will address.
My name is Walter. I've never done any radio. I come from a tiny town in Columbia County, which is very divided, not racially, but politically. And I'm convinced that we could bridge the gaps, that it would help us bridge the gaps between our differences.
Issues up here that we've kind of focused on being our core issues is our agriculture. There's a lot of farming. There's tourism in this area around farming. Tourism is kind of another, and business are areas we're trying to be supportive of all local businesses and find ways to work with local businesses. The music community, we're really focused on playing local music and there's a lively scene of artists here, and not just of sound, but also visual artists here. And so the arts are another key focus, I think, for this nation.
You mentioned our non-English programs already.
We haven't yet, but we're hoping to have shows Bangladeshi, in Spanish, and in Haitian.
Yeah, Haitian Creole, Bengali, Spanish, yeah.
Because there are communities in the area that speak those languages.
Yeah. Mariel Fiore also recognized the lack of resources to empower the Spanish-speaking population. She started the publication La Voz, which means The Voice, out of Bard College.
When I was in Argentina, I used to work as a radio producer, so radio is like in my heart. I love radio. And hearing about this opportunity, I realized, okay, why not? So I'm bringing something that is at the heart of La Voz into the radio. That is the idea. The show will be in Spanish, the name will be Que Cocinaré Hoy. That means what I will cook today, but it's not necessarily about food, but what I'm going to talk about today, or what's cooking, what's up. Some of the issues, I guess that the most important issue for the Latino community living in these rural areas is lack of access. And lack of access because of the language barrier, but also because of lack of transportation. So it's a physical barrier plus the language one.
Mariel hopes that the show will tackle these barriers, in addition to changing the general perception of Latino culture. Her show will feature people from all different parts of the community.
We're going to be interviewing people who teach English as a second language. We're going to be interviewing maybe priests, maybe artists. There is like a misconception, or maybe the general belief is that all Latinos are poor, illiterate, and work in the farms or in the restaurant. Yes, it is true that a lot of Hispanic come from very humble backgrounds and they don't have a lot of education or many opportunities, but it is also true that a lot of people maybe don't have opportunities because they lack papers. However, they have a very huge educational background.
WGXE will address the serious issues that are imperative to the growth of Columbia and Greene counties, as well as some issues that are not so serious.
Do you feel your show is helping to address, or anything, what your show is bringing to the community via the radio station?
Absolutely nothing.
That's Steve Charney, and this is his co-host, Harry.
Cut it out, will you?
He's trying to get out of the box. I'm sorry.
Harry is a dummy. Steve is a ventriloquist. He's hosted an old-time comedy show for 30 years, complete with comedy sketches, Abbott and Costello, old records, lots of silly voices. It's going to air on WGXE.
You know, I mean, I can get highfalutin about it and say, yes, we all need comedy in our lives, and this is what that's about, and finding your inner child that we, you know, have never given up, you know, and for kids, it's a good role model to see an adult acting silly and crazy, and, you know, that you don't have to be serious all the time. I could say all that, but I'm not. I mean, there is another aspect to it, which is that almost any other radio station is very corporate oriented. It's finding a common denominator. You know, these are old issues that GXE is addressing. That's why GXE is being formed. You know, to take to wrest control from the man. You know, and.
On Sunday afternoon, after 2.5 days of running workshops and building the studio, the exhausted but joyful barn raisers gathered together to march through the streets of Hudson, announcing the launch of WGXE. 10-foot puppets, people dressed as radio towers, children in masks, they all fill the streets. Anyone driving by honks their horn in support. People peek out of cafes, curious about the ballyhoo. At the end of the parade, a group of Prometheans set about releasing into the air a mini transmitter that they had made earlier that day. It's attached to about 100 colorful balloons. As it soars into the air and out of sight, it is broadcasting, through the airwaves for the very first time, WGXC Radio. And here's what they're playing.
Always felt like something was gonna happen here, and now I get to witness Hudson growing every year. Thanks to WGXE, we get a song together. I remember when getting friends was tough as leather. I remember when the first head started turning. Now with this radio, my lyrics are burning. town supported me as I was growing up, and now it seemed to be cruising on the voter bus.
Here's Brandy from Prometheus.
My experience was great. It made me really happy. It was one of the most fun things I've done at Prometheus. It's why we do what we do, and we don't get to do it very often. So I was really thrilled to be around so many people who were excited about learning and teaching and growing. And just, you know, there was, everywhere I went, there were people making things, making masks and making lunch and making cables. And it was just really exciting.
6 weeks after the barn raising, I visit Hudson once again to sit down with Tom and Galen.
We have the antenna, we have the transmitter. All we have to do is hang it and put it in place, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, if all the, you know, the contractors that are taking care of the tower site are projecting. We're hopeful that, you know, December is when it's all going to happen.
So what are you guys most looking forward to?
Doing actual radio. I mean, we've been working for 3 years on fundraising and outreach and finding chairs and tables and desks, and we'd like to start doing actual radio.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel it's hasn't really been that long of a road, but we're ready to be on the air, and I think our community is ready to have us on the air too. So
it's easy to imagine Galen and Tom continuing to work just as hard on the actual radio broadcasting as they have on getting to this moment. Meanwhile, after the short burst of celebration, those from the Prometheus Radio Project also soldier on, for there is much more work to be done.
So for the past 10 years, the Prometheus Radio Project has been working to pass a bill in Congress, the Local Community Radio Act, which would reverse this old bill. All it would do is return the authority to the FCC to license on the third adjacent frequency. So that's what we do.
If you remember, the National Association of Broadcasters, the NAB, passed a bill that restricted low-power FM stations to rural areas because they have to be so far from any full-power stations. The Local Community Radio Act would change that.
As of this recording, which is, November the 5th, 2010, we have passed the House of Representatives for the first time ever, and we have passed the Senate Commerce Committee for the third time, and we have gotten commitments from 97 out of 100 senators that they don't oppose the Local Community Radio Act. Fortunately, our bill is a relatively bipartisan bill, but in the sticky mess that is the U.S. Senate, one senator can anonymously hold a bill and prevent it from moving forward, and that's the stage we're at right now. So we're trying to remove what's called holds on the bill, which is when a given senator can block it.
There are 867 LPFMs in the U.S. right now, and no more on the horizon. But if the Local Community Radio Act passes, that number could grow into the thousands.
So much of our struggle at Prometheus in the past has been merely in getting these opportunities, getting licenses, making the opportunities available. And whether we win this bill or not, we're going to look into what can we do to strengthen and build? What can we do to make these stations more viable, to invest in them, to support them, to grow, and to keep them alive? If we do win the bill, then these opportunities are going to be everywhere, and we're really going to have to work to help people grow their networks of you know, friends and communities and extend their reach to really make the best use of this opportunity so that media is in the hands of movements and not just in the hands of corporations.
So maybe one day soon, if you, the person listening to this right now, you want to start a radio station, well, maybe you can.
Thinking about full power stations in connection to LPFM and the push to get new LPFM stations on the air now or access to those kinds of licenses. And I think we've been trying to express as a new full power station how much we support that idea clearly. And you know, there really is room for so many more stations and so many more community projects like this.
Yeah, in a year or more, I hope that Columbia and Greene County are a slightly different place, and that people understand each other a little bit better.
Yeah!
Thanks for listening. I'm Eleanor Kagan.